is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suwuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Africa's challenges during the COVID pandemic in securing timely access to tests, therapeutics, and vaccines have served as a constant reminder that we need to be doing things for ourselves.
That's Rwandan President Paul Kagame on the need for swift, innovative progress in strengthening vaccine manufacturing. Details coming up. Also, according to a UN analysis, 38 million people in the Sahel and West Africa could face severe food shortages next year. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Officials within the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that if African countries do not manufacture their own vaccines against COVID-19, the continent may not be able to withstand any future pandemics. That remark and others were made this week during a two-day summit in Kigali on vaccine manufacturing. The meeting, which was held in both in person and virtually, was sponsored by the centers and its partners, the African Union and the World Health Organization. From the Rwandan capital, reporter Eugene Umana has the details.
The African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the continent locally produces less than 1% of the vaccines it consumes. With its 1.2 billion people and 55 countries, Africa still imports 99% of all vaccines. Meanwhile, only about 6% of its people have been vaccinated against COVID-19. Jonathan Asong, who is the director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, spoke at the meeting.
As a virologist for 32 years, let me paint a picture of what might face us in future if we do not do this right. Imagine a virus that emerged with a case fatality rate of even 4 to 5% and has the transmissibility rate, what we call the R0 of this current virus, which is the SARS-CoV-2. And if we have to wait for vaccines to arrive at the rate at which we are currently dealing with this pandemic, it will eliminate all of us. So it is truly, we are here today to continue to define the future of our continent and our survival.
The Africa.
She says the solution would be to bring African countries together to establish their own vaccine manufacturing plant. Dr. Monique Nsanzabaganwa is the vice chairperson of the African Union.
A new public health order for Africa will require continental collaboration.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame said progress toward strengthening vaccine manufacturing must be fast and innovative.
Africa's challenges during the COVID pandemic in securing timely access to tests, therapeutics, and vaccines have served as a constant reminder that we need to be doing things for ourselves. This is not a new problem, but a crisis of public health is literally a matter of life and death.
Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, said his organization is ready to participate in the vaccine effort.
We will continue to provide technical and financial assistance to African Medicines Agency until it's up and running.
The African Union says that the continent aims to increase the percentage of locally produced vaccines to 60% in the next 20 years. It says one of the milestones in that regard is the establishment of an African Medicines Agency, which would facilitate the harmonization of medical products. So far, Egypt, Morocco, Rwanda, and Senegal have signed a memorandum of understanding to manufacture vaccines against COVID-19. Jean Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
In South Africa, the state lawyer tasked with investigating high-profile criminal cases, including many linked to former President Jacob Zuma, has resigned. Advocate Hermione Cronier has been leading the National Prosecuting Authorities, the NPA's investigating directorate. Legal experts say her departure will weaken the NPA's ability to deal with serious corruption. Darren Taylor reports.
Cronier was in the job less than 3 years into a five-year contract. From the outset, she was under pressure to prosecute cases involving massive corruption. In particular, citizens, civil society groups, and some in President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration wanted charges brought against ruling party politicians who were allegedly part of Zuma's state capture project. When he led South Africa between 2009 and 2018, Zuma and his allies in the African National Congress, the ANC, allegedly looted billions of dollars from state-owned enterprises. Retired Deputy Director of Public Prosecutions J.J. Du Toit says he doesn't know what's happened behind the scenes at the NPA, but he does know that Cronier's an extremely competent, dedicated lawyer and investigator.
You know, you can be the best prosecutor in the world, but if you don't have the evidence and you don't have the support of a good investigation team to assist you, you can just do nothing, and you should not, never prosecute too fast. Look what happened.
Du Toit says there's speculation that Cronier walked away from the post because she'd been pressured by certain politicians to prosecute some cases and to ignore others.
We are lawyers, we're not politicians, but unfortunately, we also work in a political environment, and you will always have as a prosecutor, especially if you're at the high echelons of power like Cronier, you surely will have politicians or any other person that try to influence you to make a decision this way or that way. But you must resist any political pressure on you to make a decision either to prosecute or not to prosecute.
He believes Cronier resigned because the government didn't give her the means, especially in the form of excellent apolitical investigators, to do her job properly.
And you're just a human at the end of the day. You can just do so much, and you're under so much pressure to do X or to do Y, and you have limited resources. You know, people can talk about nice words, human rights. You know, we must really assist in getting these people to court and et cetera, et cetera. But they really want you to bleed to death.
National Director of Public Prosecutions, Advocate Shamila Batoi, told a news conference there was nothing sinister about Cronier's resignation. Batoi maintains Cronier's departure has not hamstrung the work of her investigating directorate, the ID.
To be clear, the NPA is not in a crisis, and there is no widespread sabotage of the ID or any part of the NPA that is taking place. Advocate Cronier's resignation is the culmination of various factors, and I'm not going to go into the details of this.
Legal analysts say as long as these details remain hidden, speculation will continue to swirl around Cronier's resignation. But Batoi insists the departure of her chief investigator is a natural process.
Advocate Cronier was appointed in May 2019, that's 2 years and 8 months ago. It's a tough job in a tough environment. So it should not be a surprise or a concern that after this period, she has decided to move on. Advocate Cronier has played her part. She's helped lay the foundation for the ID. The ID is now well placed for the next chapter.
But legal experts argue that the ID isn't well placed because it serves at the pleasure of the president and so isn't truly independent. This, they say, frustrated Cronier, who felt she wasn't given the resources to pursue certain cases. They argue that the state's anti-corruption mechanisms should not be connected to the office of the president to any degree. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Worsening security in Burkina Faso is hitting the country's 1.3 million internally displaced people, or IDPs, with many being forced to flee from where they are seeking refuge for a second time. One refugee camp was closed after it was visited by Hollywood actress Angelina Jolie. And rights groups say they are investigating reports that terrorists have infiltrated another camp and committed sexual abuse. For VOA, Henry Wilkins reports on their plight from Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
As security in Burkina Faso has deteriorated in recent months, state control outside of major cities has diminished, and terrorist attacks by groups linked to Islamic State, Al-Qaeda and local bandits are going up. Increasingly, people displaced by the conflict are falling victim to terrorists in areas they had once fled to for safety. In June, Hollywood actress Angelina Jolie visited the Gadubo refugee camp in Burkina Faso's war-torn Sahel province to mark World Refugee Day. Jolie, who's the special envoy for the UN's refugee agency, the UNHCR, stressed the need to shine a light on the plight of those in need in the refugee camps.
This is where humanity and decency of the world is measured, where human strength and resilience is most clearly and starkly seen, not in the world's gleaming capitals, but in places like this.
Last month, the Gadubo refugee camp was closed. After incursions by terrorist groups at the camp, security forces were unable to guarantee safety. More than 11,000 refugees living there have since been relocated to the nearby town of Dori. Animata is one of those refugees and works with the UNHCR to advocate on behalf of female refugees from Gadubo. She spoke to VOA. Today, women come by and tell me that all their possessions remain in Gadubo because they did not have the strength to carry them. They only grabbed their children's hands to leave the camp. She says they have to buy water to survive, and there are no places in the schools for their children. Charles Zueki is a protection officer for the UNHCR in Burkina Faso.
Refugees now in Dori, we cannot say that they have enough resources to live, and we should help them to be integrated in Dori. And to do that, it is important for us to arrange how they can access services.
In an attack week before last in Fube, in the country's centre-north region, 10 civilians and 9 soldiers were killed, while IDPs were caught in crossfire and forced to flee to nearby Barcelogo. Karine Dufka, the West Africa director of Human Rights Watch, says an incident, also close to Barcelogo, took place 2 weeks ago in a town hosting a large number of displaced.
Last week, the gendarmes who had been stationed in Dablo, they left, some say, after attacks on other gendarme posts in which dozens of gendarmes were killed. Just 2 days later, armed Islamists flooded into the town. So according to residents, some 20 women were abducted by the armed Islamists and taken into the surrounding areas and subjected to sexual violation. This provoked absolute panic.
Dufka says the situation is now critical for over 10,000 people displaced in Dablo. The Ministry of Women, National Solidarity and Humanitarian Action did not respond to a request for an interview on recent incidents of IDPs falling victim to terror attacks. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The latest UN analysis of food security in the Sahel and Western Africa finds a record 38 million people will face severe food shortages next year. It warns that many may not survive without prompt and generous international aid. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Acute hunger will hit the most vulnerable people during next year's lean season. This is the period when food stocks are at their lowest, and millions of people will not have enough food to eat. The lean season normally occurs in the West and Central African region between June and August. But World Food Program Senior Research Officer for the region, Olo Sib, says signs indicate next year's lean season will begin as early as March.
Given that the food stocks are very low for livestock, there's not enough pasture for livestock, we anticipate an earlier lean season, especially for the pastoralists in the region. And this will push people to adopt certain strategies.
Sib notes many people already are feeling the pinch of hunger and are resorting to extreme coping strategies. These include selling livestock and other assets to have enough money to put food on the table. The WFP official says climate and conflict remain two major drivers of the poor harvest and poor production in the Sahel. He notes the past few years have been exceptionally dry in the Sahel, and massive drought has affected millions of people from West Africa. He adds widespread conflict in the region has discouraged farmers from planting their crops and pastoralists from moving their livestock freely in search of grazing land. He says satellite imagery shows 35% of the villages have suffered severe crop losses due to conflict and massive displacement.
We are talking about 5 to 7 million people overall displaced. We are talking about 13 million people affected by conflict in the region, and most of them are farmers, most of them are pastoralists, and this conflict and is pushing them away from their livelihood system and their capacity to produce.
The United Nations says early action is needed to ward off the worst. It is calling on the international community to step up now before the lean season sets in. UN officials say early and adequate investment is needed to prepare for next year's agricultural season. They say the provision of food aid is urgently required to prevent malnutrition from soaring. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States yesterday imposed sanctions on more than a dozen people and entities in Iran, Syria, and Uganda. It accused them of being connected to serious human rights abuses and repressive acts. The French news agency AFP reports that the chief of Uganda's military intelligence, Major General Abel Kandiho, was among the U.S. targets. The U.S. statement says Kandiho and his office were complicit in beatings, sexual abuse, and electrocution, and that he personally led some interrogations of detainees. The Ugandan military says it was disappointed with such treatment of a U.S. ally. Rights activists have accused Uganda's military intelligence of orchestrating abuses against members of the opposition, including Bobi Wine. He claims security forces abducted hundreds of his supporters ahead of January's presidential election. Analysts say Zimbabwe's currency has fallen by close to 70% this year, further battering a weak economy that's also suffered from the fallout of the fight against COVID-19. Adigando tells the story of people, especially women, who observers say bear the biggest brunt of devaluation.
The Zimbabwean dollar is trading at around 200 to the US dollar on the parallel market, double the official rate of 102 and down 30% since January, according to analysts. The figures paint a gloomy picture unfolding each day for the people of Zimbabwe. Analysts have urged the government to bite the bullet and accept what they say is the inevitable re-dollarization of the economy. They say that even the government lacks confidence in the local currency as it charges citizens the US dollar rate or foreign currency for some services. Civil servants were recently awarded US dollar bonuses in a move which analysts say lends credence to the belief that the government acknowledges the local currency is worthless. A SNAP survey by VOA, most local shops in Bulawayo reveals prices pegged to the US dollar's parallel market rate, but salaries are not indexed that way, pricing many items out of the reach of most people. VOA spoke with some of them about the impact of devaluation of the Zimbabwean dollar. Patience Ngwenya, a mother of two, is a health practitioner who earns around 32,000 Zimbabwean dollars or US$160 on the parallel market, a figure which she agrees reflects the reality on the ground as basics are getting out of reach.
From January 2021 up until now, you've seen and experienced an almost 100% increase in most of the basic commodities. A loaf of bread around January was going for about 90 RTGS dollars, but today that same loaf of bread is going for something like about 170 RTGS dollars. And that's the same with about cooking oil. Last year, cooking oil, beginning of year, cooking oil was going for something like 200 and something dollars. But today, that same bottle of cooking oil is going for about 600 RTGS. And this is in almost all the basic commodities. The same with mealy-meal. We have also experienced that. And this has plunged most of the working force in way, way deeper below the poverty timeline.
When you say citizens are between a rock and a hard place, because the government's actions are also inflationary.
We have seen that the government is not actually increasing salaries in as much as these basic commodities are going up. And this has actually made it difficult for somebody who is going to work to even fund themselves to go to work. Prices for school fees were ordered by the government to be increased, and most people cannot afford to pay school fees for their children in some of the government institutions.
Tando Duwe, a school teacher and mother of three, agrees.
Prices are now above reach of ordinary Zimbabwe. Just to mention, maybe 2 kg of sugar again is now going above 400 RTGS. And this makes the life of an ordinary Zimbabwe hard, because our salaries are not being increased, but the local currency is devaluing by day.
Those in the informal sector are particularly grappling to put food on the table, especially with the festive season adding to cost and expectations that diaspora remittances from South Africa and Botswana will be down. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
In Kenya, refugees and their supporters have welcomed a new law that gives the country's 500,000 refugees better access to education and work. The law comes as Kenya plans to close two of the region's largest refugee camps, which are home to more than 400,000 people. Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
Willie Rory, a refugee from Burundi, has been in Kenya for the last 7 years without a regular source of income. He holds a diploma in mechanical training from Burundi and an additional one from Kenya. Yet, he has been unable to find steady unemployment in the country's capital, Nairobi. Refugees like him have to make do with what they get, he says. He says, we take up whichever jobs we get, even construction site jobs, because we don't have the required paper to get jobs we are qualified for. He says, we can get the Certificate of Good Conduct papers, the National Hospital Insurance, the Kenya Revenue Authority PINs, the National Social Security Fund papers, and to get any job here, you must have that. Rari's hopes of getting a decent job now lie with the speedy implementation of the new refugees bill that President Uhuru Kenyatta recently signed into law. The law paves the way for refugees to integrate into the Kenyan economy and social life. Victor Odero of the International Rescue Committee says the new law is a bright spot in the quest for empowering refugees.
There was no obligation, certainly in law, the state to facilitate the issuance of legal documentation through which then refugees would be able to get economic and social development, basically become self-reliant.
That ability for refugees to participate in Kenyan society has also been welcomed by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. The agency spokesperson in Kenya, Eugene Bayan, says this will make the refugees feel valued and dignified in their new homes.
Integration for a refugee is critical. One, because refugees don't want to be the other, and they want to continue their life while seeking asylum in host country until they can return to their country safely.
The new law comes ahead of the planned closure next year of Kenya's two largest refugee camps, which together house more than 400,000 people, most from Somalia or South Sudan. Odero says the law will help make the process of clearing the camps easier.
Refugee camps are simply unsustainable. I think this is something that people agree on across the board. So the question has been, where or can we have a legal framework that gives sufficient anchorage to durable solutions? And what we can see from this legislation is that it moves things forward. It is actually progressive.
The close to 500,000 refugees in Kenya, just like Rari, want the law to take effect soon so that they can get the chance to earn a decent living outside of the camps. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.